Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Early this morning, Senate Republicans took their first major step toward dismantling the Affordable Care Act by approving a plan for a so-called reconciliation bill. Such a bill can be used to gut much of the health law and would be immune from a Democrat filibuster. Republicans were responding to President-elect Donald Trump, who earlier this week called for repeal within days or weeks. Yesterday, he described the process, if not the substance.
We're going to be submitting, as soon as our Secretary is approved, almost simultaneously, shortly thereafter, a plan. It'll be repeal and replace. It will be essentially simultaneously. It will be various segments, you understand, but will most likely be on the same day or the same week, but probably the same day, could be the same hour.
Today, we're talking about what all of this could mean for Ohioans. Coming up, we'll hear from two points of view on Obamacare and the effort to repeal and replace. Joining us now by phone is Columbus Dispatch Washington correspondent Jessica Wehrman. Welcome back, Jessica.
Good morning, Ann. How are you?
Pretty good. What is the strategy behind what's the worry about a filibuster? Will the Democrats have no opportunities with this kind of process to voice their concerns?
Yes, this makes it much more difficult. So under Senate rules, traditionally you have to have 60 votes to get anything passed in the Senate, because the way the Constitution set it up, the House gets things passed and the Senate sort of slows things down a little bit. The Senate is supposed to be the kind of more of mediating process. However, Senate Republicans last night used, or early this morning, I guess, depending on the timing, used the same rules the Senate Democrats used to pass Obamacare to basically start the ball rolling for repealing. Now, what they did last night was not repeal the bill, but what they did do was change the rules to make sure that all they needed was 51 votes rather than 60 to pass an Obamacare repeal. This is under sort of very arcane procedural stuff, like some of the sort of arcane rules of the Senate. But in essence, it says, you know, you only need 51 votes to undo this.
Usually you see them working late into the night when there's a deadline on some kind of budget issue, or usually there's a deadline associated with it. Was there a deadline associated with this?
No, what this was basically the Senate was trying to move forward as quickly as possible. But the other thing that they did was create what they call a voterama, where they just sort of vote on all sorts of things and allow people to vote on kind of controversial measures and that kind of thing. But then they tucked it in. Donald Trump has sort of said he wants to get this done by January 27th. That's not a hard and fast deadline, but it's sort of the marker that congressional Republicans have put in. But I don't really – to say there's an actual really hard deadline on it, I don't know that that's actually true. I think the deal is basically he wants to get the ball rolling, and so do congressional Republicans. God knows they've tried so many times to repeal this, and now they have their opportunity.
Is it something like 60 times? I don't know.
You know what? I lost count.
Yeah.
But yes, I think you're very safe in saying over a dozen. I mean, I keep writing these stories and going, okay, wait, how many times?
Yeah.
Like, never mind.
You don't have like some little counter that you can just push?
I should have a little ticker on my desk.
Exactly. So January 27th, what's the magic of that? That's a week after he takes office.
It is. That's 7 days. And he sort of signaled that he really wants this going at the same time. Now, originally Republicans said, okay, we all know we want to do this, but the strategy and sort of the timeline is the thing that has been tricky. Congressional Republicans, House Republicans have mentioned that what they would like to do ideally would say, some of them have said they'd like to repeal and then have a transition period where nothing really changes for 2 to 3 years. And in the meantime, they're crafting sort of a comprehensive bill to replace what they repealed. And Trump made it very clear first with the New York Times and then in his press conference yesterday that he has no indication of doing that. He wants this to happen sooner rather than later. Even our senator kind of got involved in the timeline. Rob Portman was part of an amendment that was later withdrawn last night that had to do with delaying sort of the reconciliation rules until March rather than doing it in January. And that, he argued, would give them more time to craft a replacement.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about efforts in the U.S. Senate to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. My guest is Jessica Wehrman. She's Columbus Dispatch Washington correspondent. Early this morning, Republicans achieved the first step in that process by passing a reconciliation bill that would affect the impact that Democrats could have on the process going forward. When Donald Trump says he wants it all done by January 27th, what he wants done by January 27th is the repeal and the replace?
See, that is kind of unclear. Yes, he wants these things to occur at the same time.
In 2 weeks.
Yeah, but how doable that is really a complete, that's another story. And the other thing, with the New York Times, he sort of said this has to go at the same time. Yeah, we'll have a vote next week, which probably came to as a surprise to some of the congressional Republicans who were reading that interview. But yesterday, he kind of made it sound a little bit more nebulous, meaning he said he wanted this to happen very quickly after his Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tom Price, is confirmed. Now, I'm not really sure what the timeline is on that, but it's not necessarily January 27th. There could be more time. He's really using the bully pulpit on this. And I think what this is really sort of, if I'm trying to kind of theorize, or I guess, sort of be an armchair psychologist, I think he really just wants to urge them to not be complacent, to get this party started. But it's hard to know when this is actually going to happen, because the reality of replacing a very, very intense, very complicated law, it's hard to do that in a week or two.
Heck, it took them 2 years to put the law together in the first place, right?
It did. And, it's a massive law. And, you'll see in the House, actually, what's interesting is you do see some coalitions of folks who say, you know what, we really need to know what the replacement is going to be before we repeal. And that's from moderates and conservative groups who say, we want to see a plan.
You mean the House is being more thoughtful about this than the Senate?
Kind of, yeah. Hmm. I almost sort of say that kind of, choked on those words, but yes.
Well, let me ask you this. Why is it kicking off in the Senate?
I'm not actually sure on that one. I think that the Senate, I have no idea.
Yeah, I know. I haven't. I ask that sincerely because I haven't heard anybody explain that. All right. No. So Democrats have argued already, so has President Obama, that Republicans have had 6 years to come up with an alternative plan to the Affordable Care Act. And it makes me wonder if they've been working on it and if they've tried to repeal it 60 times now, don't they have some idea of what they're going to replace it with already? Shouldn't there be something in place by now?
I've been spending a lot of time asking folks about that, whether there is some sort of secret plan, whether there's, and you really do not get a very, very specific plan. Now, I know Tom Price, the future HHS secretary, probably is as well prepared as anyone among the Republican caucus. He's a former congressman to craft some sort of replacement, but I think it's probably going to be led by the administration at this point. Now, that could change, but when you talk to folks, they say they talk a lot about HSAs, but that's not necessarily a replacement. It's just they would like to extend that.
HSAs,
the health spending accounts, which are the take some money out of your own, but that doesn't really replace poor people who would say that they have access to health care that did not have access to health care before the Affordable Care Act was passed.
Do we have any indications about things like, extending coverage to children to the age of 26? That provision.
I asked. Remember Trump is always sort of an unpredictable force in this whole process. But last week I sat down with Pat Tiberi, and he is the subcommittee chair of the health subcommittee.
Ohio congressman, right?
Yeah, he's a congressman from Central Ohio. And I asked him about that, and I asked him about pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
And he seemed very, very certain that those two aspects of the bill would be maintained. Now, that's something that a lot of people think about. But if you listen to the rhetoric and the debate last night, it's very clear that that has not really satisfied Democrats. They're still concerned that those two aspects will get swept into whatever the repeal is. So, that's something you want to keep an eye on. Those are two very, very popular and kind of universally popular provisions in the bill, saying if you have a kid who's up to 26, you can keep them on the parents' health care, and also saying you can't be denied health care because you have a pre-existing condition.
But those very two provisions are very dependent on everybody having to be signed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the
economically, they're tied to that.
That's another one of these. That's another part of this bill that sort of stymies me that I'm still trying to wrap my head around is the cost of it. How do you undo? I mean, they did this by saying you have to have health care in this country, and a lot of the things that they've been able to do and afford are because of that. You also have the Medicaid expansion. Does that go away? That's something John Kasich has been actually pretty outspoken saying we should keep this expansion. This is a good thing. So those are. There's just so many details of this that are still being worked out. The only thing we know at this point is that the Senate has begun to take the first few steps and that Trump wants it done sooner rather than later.
The only thing we know is that, and yet I will continue to ask you questions.
Of course, that's fine. So,
what have you heard from the insurance <You're right. laughs> industry? What have you heard from the insurance industry about this?
You know, I have. I've been mostly focused on the congressional aspect of
it.
So,
but are the lobbyists out there at all? I haven't been able to find anything from them. So,
you know, I haven't heard as much from them at this point. One thing I do know, one of the Republicans' key complaints is that there's far less competition in these different districts and states. I know that T-Berry told me that in Ohio, for example, there are a third of the counties only have one provider, and that's the same with the states, and they expect that coverage to go down. So clearly something is not working for them. The competition isn't enough to keep insurance providers in certain counties. So to a certain degree, I'm sure they're holding their breath and going, okay, does this create more competition? And Republicans, the centerpiece of what they say they want is more competition in the industry. They believe that this works best when there's competition. And when we're encouraging, insurance companies to be providing, they talk about across state lines, having coverage across state lines. That's not something that's currently in the bill. So those are parts of this bill that they're going to look at going forward. It's just such an interesting sort of complicated bill, and there's so many aspects of it and things that people don't even talk about. God, how do you move a massive aircraft carrier backwards with you? I mean, there's just a lot to undo.
Yeah, there's stuff that we don't really, have never really talked about, even on this show very much, but things about how they have to label how many calories in food at restaurants and that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, you cannot understate the degree to which this is just a mammoth bill. And, you know, you're talking about universal health care coverage. You're talking about also making sure that, I mean, if Republicans go in and pass a law that undoes insurance, that takes something away from people, it's going to be hard to, you know, it's going to be hard for a lot of folks to absorb that they had something and now they do not have something. That is not a politically popular move. So that's why I think Republicans have been very cautious about saying, no, nothing's going to change at first. We're going to do this gradually. And then, you know, here comes Hurricane Trump.
I would imagine that a lot of Republicans, one of their chief goals is to eliminate the Medicaid expansion. They didn't like that. That was something they hated about this whole thing. Mm-hmm. The 32 states have embraced it, including Ohio. It affects well over 200,000 people in Ohio alone, maybe a million. So what about that? Is that something that anyone's talked about the future of?
I think the Medicaid expansion is something that has Kasich very concerned that they would take away that expansion.
Yeah.
Because, again, that's when you talk about taking things away from people. A lot of the reason so many more people have health care is because Medicaid was expanded in those states. So I think that it's very politically unpopular among many congressional Republicans. That would be something that I think would be easier for them to take away than, say, the pre-existing conditions or the 26-year-old, you know, access to parental health care. But again, I think you run a risk of it being really politically unpopular. One of the folks who actually, the only Republican last night who voted against those budget rules moving forward was Rand Paul. Now, Kentucky is a state that has really benefited from Obamacare. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be, this is something that's going to be kind of politically, it's when the reality hits, it's going to be a lot harder to swallow for, I think, some Americans.
Well, and you've heard, and I'm sure you've heard by now, that a lot of people are confused. They don't understand that the Affordable Care Act is the same thing as Obamacare.
They don't.
I've been surprised at that. I mean, I'd heard it anecdotally, but now the numbers are really rolling in. It's kind
of
shocking.
I think they don't. And there's also a couple of misconceptions about, you know, when you say, oh, you know, my employer covered health care, it's really gotten, you know, that things are gotten more. That's not really Obamacare. That's your employer provided health care. When you talk about Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, in a lot of ways, you're talking about the people who aren't using their employer provided health care. They're using the exchanges. You know, they're using the Medicaid expansion. It's, you know, I mean, if your employer provided health care has gone up, that's sort of, it may be related to it in some way, but it's not caused. I mean, it's not Obamacare.
Right. Well, Jessica Wehrman, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
I hope I was able to help. It's quite a zoo up here.
It's always fun to talk to you anyways. Jessica Wehrman, Columbus Dispatch, Washington correspondent. Coming up, we're going to talk to a couple different points, you know, talk with people with different points of view about this, see what they think about plans to repeal and hopefully replace, for in some people's minds, Obamacare, also known as the Affordable Care Act. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the impact of repealing the Affordable Care Act, nicknamed Obamacare by Republicans back when the measure passed in 2013. Early this morning, votes were cast to begin the process without the hassle of a Democrat-led filibuster. They were further inspired this week by President-elect Donald Trump, who laid out a timeline for repealing and replacing the health care law, laid out his timeline for immediately repealing and replacing it. Yesterday, he told reporters that he was doing the Democrats a favor.
Obamacare is the Democrats' problem. We are going to take the problem off the shelves for them. We're doing them a tremendous service by doing it. We could sit back and let them hang with it. We are doing the Democrats a great service.
Today, we're talking about what this means to Ohioans who rely on either the government-subsidized insurance or the Medicaid expansion created by Obamacare and embraced by Governor Kasich. Joining us is Senior Project Director for Policy Matters Ohio. It's a left-leaning and nonprofit public policy research group, Wendy Patton. Welcome.
Thank you.
Also, Senior Policy Analyst at Buckeye Institute, a right-leaning public policy research group, Greg Lawson. Welcome back.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
You know, we talked at the end of last year that we'd be getting together, and lo and behold, here we are, because the president's saying that within 2 weeks he wants a repeal of the law and have it replaced with something else, at least something on the books to start working on. Ohio is among 32 states to embrace the Medicaid expansion called for in the Affordable Care Act. Wendy Patton, I mean, what do your analysts tell you? What do you know about what happens if that goes away?
Well, we know that a lot that Ohioans really like goes away. And I don't think we're that much in the dark about what might happen. The Republican Congress did send to President Obama a repeal bill in 2016, which he vetoed. But they do have a blueprint. We've seen it before. It was vetoed by the president. And we can analyze the impact.
They sent him a repeal and a potential replacement.
It was more repeal than replacement,
okay.
But it was there was a bill sent, and this can provide a blueprint, and it has been analyzed. We released an issue brief yesterday, which looked at the impact of this, and I think it's important to look at the impact of a repeal in the context of what this Affordable Care Act has done good for Ohio, the 5 million Ohioans who would have had pre-existing condition and could not have gotten insurance and now can, the 4 million Ohioans who had insurance plans that had a lifetime cap, or if you're in the middle of cancer treatment, you run it costs too much, you can be cut off. There are many things that the Affordable Care Act brought to Ohio that we lose with the repeal. One thing that we do lose if the blueprint for the Ryan plan is followed and pushed off to 2019, The estimate is that 964,000 Ohioans lose their insurance coverage either through Medicaid, which the expansion currently covers about 700,000 people, or through the federal exchanges, 212,000.
The Ryan plan would scuttle the Medicaid expansion.
The Urban Institute analyzed the Ryan plan.
Right.
And their estimate is that the between Medicaid expansion, between elimination of Medicaid expansion and the elimination of the marketplace subsidies, yes, people would lose health coverage insurance. And this would be in 2019. It's broadly understood that the repeal would be pushed off for 2 years. So in 2019, we're looking at the largest component of the Affordable Care Act, the Medicaid expansion.
For Ohio.
Being dropped. Yeah, in Ohio, yeah. It's the largest component. There would be disarray within the insurance markets immediately as insurers might look at. Now, it is possible that the Congress may want to retain some of the protections that people have found especially beneficial, the anti-discrimination for health causes or for gender, and the lifetime caps. There may be a desire to keep some of that. But if you keep some of that, but you don't have a broad insurance market that the mandate creates, you sort of collapse your insurance market because insurers can't pay.
Right. The whole idea of insurance is more people get it than need it, so that the people who need it mm-hmm. can use it.
That's the interwoven nature.
That's the basic premise of it. Greg Lawson, you know, what about the Buckeye Institute? Let's start with concerns. Are there any concerns just about how the process is moving forward at this point, for starters?
Well, I think it would come as no surprise that in general, we think that a lot of what's happened with the Affordable Care Act, which is, of course, known popularly in many circles as Obamacare,
right.
They are the same thing. That we've thought that there's a lot of problems with how it's operationally worked, that it has offered coverage to a lot of folks, but we still have a lot of concerns about access to care and things like that. So we think that in the long run, repeal is absolutely correct. However, you don't just repeal something and pull the rug completely out. Obviously, there must be a replacement because there's a reason we got Obamacare in the first place, too, which is things weren't working. People weren't satisfied with coverage. People weren't satisfied with some of these issues that we have talked about, the pre-existing condition issue. Now, there was a reason that actually made sense why the pre-existing conditions was part of baked into why it existed. It had a lot to do with adverse selection and problems with making sure you had enough people in the insurance market,
right.
Which is what you were just talking about. And that's obviously why you have the mandate and things like that. Our general view, and we're a free market organization, so we believe that markets and competition are what creates more opportunity and drives down costs, gets over time better products out there, mm-hmm. is that we need more competition because the exchanges that we have right now have a lot of mandates on the benefits that are contained within the insurance plans in order to provide those. By reducing some of those, or at least allowing, I wouldn't just say reducing, but by allowing a larger a range of types of plans, some of which may offer less, you will have the ability then to have more plans coming onto perhaps even a much broader market. A national market, for example, is something we think would be good. So those are the things we need to be talking about is how do we move – unfortunately, we're talking about, you know, repealing and replacing, and it's obviously very politicized. But we really need to figure out there are some real flaws.
Well,
and
everyone
we need to improve
said there's
on
been
that.
Flaws from the beginning. No one's disagreed with that. The problem is why they haven't been addressed since the law went into effect. Everybody knew nothing that big would ever be perfect at the outset, particularly as you learn how it unfolds. Mm-hmm. But they haven't been able to tweak it over time, primarily because the Republicans control Congress and they didn't want to. So everyone agrees there's problems. President Obama has said he'd be all for it if they can find a replacement that's superior, right?
Well, he said that, but I think that there's a substantial philosophical divide about how we actually make this work.
Right.
I think that there's a belief that you can, because of the nature nature of the tax policy. I mean, Obamacare is an extraordinarily complicated piece of legislation. You were just talking about how complicated this very process is to undo it.
Right.
But the bill itself and the number of years it took to do it, I mean, you have things like risk corridors in order to subsidize insurance for the first few years. You have Cadillac taxes on certain plans that do go on employer tax plans, by the way, to fund the tax credits that pay for the premium subsidies for people in the exchange. So that's why sometimes private employer plans have seen increases. So there is a connection there. And all of this is just one big I was actually reading a fascinating article that likened it to the Gordian knot, which is this really obviously complicated, it's a mythological thing, but it's this everybody thinks of that and they're like, oh my gosh, you can't disentangle this thing. And the challenge that we have is, how do you disentangle it, or do you just cut the knot and then try to create something fresh and new?
Two premises I want to talk about and see where you agree and disagree. We agree that for insurance to cover the riskiest people, most people have to be paying into the system so that the riskiest can afford to cover the riskiest. Right? I mean, that's just how the insurance system works. And then, do you agree? And I, Greg, I'll point this to you, that the more people who have regular health care, regardless of where it comes from, the healthier we are as a society, the less we'll need that catastrophic, that serious illness coverage. The healthier people, and if they're not waiting until it's catastrophic illness, that it's cheaper for everybody that way.
I think that being able to have the right incentives there for people to take care of themselves, you know, eating healthy, exercising. I mean, some of the problems, first world problems, in a lot of ways we have.
Also, getting wellness care, right?
And absolutely. And the checkups and things like that, so that you can maintain those things for the kind of chronic conditions, diabetes, obviously, and cholesterol and those issues. Now, there's always going to be room for some catastrophic coverage for, you know, the accidents and the unforeseen genetic problems
but
that emerge.
Is there a basic premise there that you agree with?
I think that it's good to be able to do that. But I would also say that one of the big challenges we have in healthcare, which even transcends, amazingly enough, Obamacare, is that we, ever since we inserted third-party payers, and this includes private insurers or government, what we've done is we have created a wedge that means that individuals don't look around for – now, in emergency care, you don't have time to look around. But if you're looking around for something that is a non-emergency type service or you're looking to just go to multiple doctors to do your regular checkups and things like that, we shop around for a lot of type of services. We would like to incentivize people to be able to shop around so that creates the incentive, again, for competition, so people are competing on prices as well as quality and that people can look around. So this gets into questions of price transparency for healthcare services. This gets into the question of the health savings accounts. We heard a little bit about why a lot of Republicans talk about health savings accounts is because what that does is it allows consumers to shop around. They end up – when they have a catastrophic need – they have insurance and pays for that.
Well, that's for consumers who already probably are covered by insurance anyways. That's for people who have money to save.
Well, and there's that. But there's the thing is that if you – because there's several types of folks. You've got the folks that are probably – there's Medicaid is always going to exist. And I think even under a lot of the replacement plans, there's talks of the block grants and what are we going to do with that? But you're always going to have Medicaid. You know, there's always the age blind and disabled population, and there's going to be a subset of the population that's going to need some assistance there. Now, we've always argued that there should be some perhaps additional strings attached to Medicaid for certain, folks who aren't working.
Kind of
and not just that, but maybe even work requirements to make sure now, because, 40% of people, I think the release of studies are that were working, the males in Ohio in the Medicaid expansion, but that also implies that over half of the people that were getting Medicaid expansion were not working. So we want to tie that in, and that gets into economics. And so this is where all of these issues, when I said it was a Gordian knot, I really meant it, because these are all interrelated issues that are hard to disentangle.
And there's definite philosophical differences. I mean, ultimately, Wendy Patton, I mean, for insurance to work, you need to have a wide pool of people putting into it. We agree on that, for the most seriously ill to be covered.
You do for the insurance pool, but it's also well understood that industrialized developed nations provide health care for their people. In a press conference yesterday, Pastor Eric Brown of the Woodland Church here in Columbus said, here in America, before the Affordable Care Act, pedigreed dogs and racehorses got better care than millions of people in America. The Affordable Care Act has fixed that. It has brought us into the 21st century with the rest of the civilized and developed world. I think it's important to look at some of the benefits that the Affordable Care Act has brought to Ohio. It has dramatically increased access to health care. Ohio is one of the has one of the lowest rates of uninsurance in the nation. We're the third of states that have a very small share of our population now uninsured. The governor did do a study of the outcome of that Medicaid expansion last year, the 700,000 people, and found that of that group, the majority had found what they call a usual source of care. For a long time, these people without insurance did not have a doctor to go to. They went to the emergency room. You need a usual source of care, a doctor to go to for a checkup, for labs, to improve your health. People were finding their way to that usual source of care. So providing the health insurance was making the improvements that Greg was pointing out that we really need to see in our health system. One thing that the governor's study found that I think many people don't would be surprised to learn is that of the Medicaid expansion group, indeed, 43% were working. Of those that weren't working, about three quarters were looking for a job. These were people in transition. And as a result, the majority of them also, 56%, were white men. This is a group that has had health problems, that has seen a diminished lifespan. It's sort of a national emergency. Medicaid expansion is addressing this emergency as it should. So I think it's important to look at there are complexities in the program itself, but the outcomes are pretty clear. The outcomes have been beneficial. The outcomes of the Affordable Care Act, the Medicaid expansion here in Ohio, too, have been strengthening our health and hospital systems, particularly in our rural counties. We were joined yesterday in a press conference by the CEO of Berger Hospital Systems in Pickaway County, who pointed out that about 3,000 people, including many veterans in Pickaway County, had benefited from the Medicaid expansion. They had been able to expand their Medicaid staff or their medical staff, and about 30% of the time of the expanded staff is spent taking care of these people and making them healthy again. This also needs to be put in context of the larger Ohio healthcare economy. Mm-hmm. Medicaid's a big player. Medicaid provides health coverage for a quarter of all Ohioans. So the program is much bigger than the Medicaid expansion. There are about 3,000 in Medicaid. The expansion itself is 700,000.
We are talking about plans to repeal and replace with what? We still aren't sure. The Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Donald Trump and GOP lawmakers agree that repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act is a top priority. How soon that all happens is still unclear. The president-elect wants it done quickly, simultaneously, and with days of his inauguration, he's saying He's shooting for some reason for the date of January 27th. Some Republican lawmakers would rather phase out Obamacare over time while they devise an alternative plan. Meanwhile, the Senate has already moved forward on a vote to repeal the law, even without a replacement plan for the 20 million Americans who rely on the law for health care coverage. Still with us, Senior Project Director for Policy Matters Ohio, Wendy Patton, and also Senior Policy Analyst at the Buckeye Institute, Greg Lawson. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, the talk of gutting is of gutting the Affordable Care Act. When I think of gutting, I think of major organs being removed, right? So we talk about, we just talked about Medicaid. What other fundamental components of Obamacare are at risk, according to what you know of the blueprint that's been put forth by House Speaker Paul Ryan?
The federal exchanges are also at risk. In Ohio, last year, 212,000 people were enrolled in the federal exchanges. This year, 230,000 have already signed up for it. We know that this helps people of modest income afford insurance that doesn't break their budget. The average subsidy through tax credits to help people pay for insurance in Ohio was $240 a month, taking care of 60% of their insurance coverage. So this is another critical component to the family budget in Ohio, to people, families of moderate income, and to the keeping intact the entire health care system. It's important also, again, another note of context. In Ohio, our largest job groups now are low-wage job groups. Retail, fast food, restaurants, even health care, home health care aides and nursing home, child care workers. Out of our top 12 largest job groups, only one takes a family with a couple kids above being eligible for Medicaid, frankly. Mm-hmm. So our economy is sort of a low-wage economy for increasingly large numbers of people. Removal of the subsidized market, maybe for people who are not eligible for Medicaid but are not earning enough money to afford the health care coverage they need on their own, is a critical component of helping families in the economy.
Greg Lawson, what about that?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if you see some level of, when we see the exchanges, I think will change. And, you know, there's talk of a national marketplace trying to develop where you have, you know, Trump's talked about it, a number of Republicans
in Congress. Getting rid of the geographic boundaries of insurance.
So if you sell a plan in one state on one side of the country, in theory, that plan would then be available in another state. Now, that has a whole host of domestic state regulatory issues because historically states have regulated insurance. But the discussion is that then you have a complete all these options that are there, which also expands the pool of people because now you're not restricted to the pool of people in one state. You have a pool of a handful of people in Wyoming, maybe a lot of people in California, maybe a lot of people
but
here.
But that requires insurance companies to then cut deals with healthcare providers because in the United States, that's another segment that's segmented.
No, it is. And you're right. That is another piece of it. The other thing is we want to be careful, too, because I think Wendy brings up a very important point about the fact that you do have a lot of low-wage jobs and you also have a lot of situations where people don't get insurance at all, which is why they're in the exchange. They don't get it through the employer. Now, I think something like 60-something percent of people do get insurance through employer coverage, which is not directly impacted by Obamacare. You know, Obamacare is Medicaid expansion and the subsidized exchanges we've been talking about. Right. So what I think you're talking – and some of this is actually a weird quirk. I mean, health insurance being tied to your place of employment is actually an odd little quirk that goes all the way back to really World War II and wage and price controls back in World War II. So what we really want to have is we want to have a system, too, where you have people who can have their own plans to be able to go between jobs, too. This gets to economic mobility arguments and labor and transitioning between jobs and not worrying, oh, my gosh, I'm stuck in a job because of insurance, too. We want a system that can seamlessly do all of this. Right now, Obamacare doesn't do that. I would not be surprised, and this isn't to see that there will probably be some level of, there'll probably be some level of subsidy that probably will not entirely disappear. as we morph into another type of an exchange where we have less mandates on the benefits that are required in plans so that you have additional plans coming on. I think that some framework in that general wheelhouse is likely, along with reforms to Medicaid, that will be probably substantial reforms to Medicaid.
I think that the point about the difficulty of achieving competitiveness, national competitiveness in the insurance markets is well taken. How is an insurer who is concentrated in, say, the Nevada, Arizona area going to set up a network of providers in Ashtabula County where there's dispersed physicians, different practitioners to get in touch with and to negotiate contracts with, as well as other rural counties in Ohio and Pennsylvania and Mississippi? It's a big country. It's a regionally divided country. I think the goal of getting to comprehensive national insurance is going to take us through a process that might feel like the airline deregulation. A lot of boom and bust, a lot of plan that come up here and go away there, a lot of instability in the market. And that does not lead to a condition that fosters access, consistent care, consistent doctors, and the kind of stability we need in our health system to keep people healthy and also to support a major employer in urban and rural areas.
Bill in Akron, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much, Ann, for the show. Yeah, I'm not much into doctoring at all, but I had a bad toothache. It was infected. I had to go to the dentist, and they had to give me some antibiotics and things before they could treat it. Well, it's three different prescriptions. I went home, and I called Giant Eagle. That's where I went before. Mm-hmm. It was over $100. So I called around to Rite Aid and drug different companies. Mm-hmm. And I ended up is $33, I think, for all three prescriptions. I had to drive to three different drugstores. I don't feel good. And this fellow that's on there with you, he's saying they want more competition. I don't think people should have to shop around. When you go look at gas stations all around Akron, they're within a nickel of each other.
Yeah, there's some people who still shop for it, though. But point taken.
To shop. And then Ohio passed a law, too, that if you get – I have a friend of mine that's had heart surgery. He can't transfer his prescriptions because Ohio says, because of the drug problem with opiates, they don't want to let you transfer prescriptions. There's other ways to deal with these drug problems. You can track people's prescriptions without having to restrict them from moving their prescriptions. Mm-hmm. I don't think we want more competition. I think we need to. These drug companies and the doctors, they're all rich. They live in nice houses and they make, you know.
Yeah. Well, private, it's capitalism, but Greg Lawson, Bill from Akron's basic point is competition appropriate when it comes to healthcare?
Well, competition is appropriate in pretty much every economic endeavor because it does over time work that way. One of the challenges in healthcare is, again, healthcare has grown up in a weird, crazy quilt patch of regulations and laws and things. I mean, again, the tying to employment is a quirk of that you couldn't pay people more, so they gave health insurance as a benefit to people during World War II. Mm-hmm. Now it just kind of stuck around, and all. And now employers get tax benefits for offering health care, which is why they offer health care so much. They get taxed much that individuals don't get.
But they're not going to actually administer the health care. They're going to hire an outside.
No, they'll hire the insurance to do it, but they're incentivized to do that.
Came to the fore at the same time.
Right. And so you have all these kind of odd things that have emerged over time that creates that. I think this gets back to one of the arguments I made before, which is a little off tangent on the Affordable Care Act per se, but I think gets to the broader issue of healthcare, which is really the core issue. Mm-hmm. Whether we're talking about Obamacare, whether we're talking about whatever the Republicans in Congress and President Trump will eventually sign, we have to figure out how do we get the most access to care, the best quality for the most people at the most affordable price that doesn't put individuals in bankruptcy and that doesn't put governments over time in bankruptcy. Bankruptcy as costs go up and pharmaceutical costs are expensive. Mm-hmm. And we have FDA issues with how long do we take to approve new drugs?
Right.
Do we have people sitting on patents so that we can't get generics out faster that drives up the cost? That's part of the problem.
But that's part of the free enterprise.
Well, not sitting on patents. Well, that's not something that's good. We don't support that.
Okay.
I mean, there should be you have a certain period of time that you should get a profit, but you shouldn't just sit on it or make one small change, because then you don't allow people to come in and you have a monopoly, and that's the opposite of a market. So, I mean, but and I know I bring all this up.
Yeah,
sorry.
I know. It's
I think that healthcare is really it's a right. It's a human right. It should be a public good. I think the caller brings up an excellent point in his travails to try to get something that fits within his budget. He was lucky enough to have a car. He could drive around. A lot of people in Ohio don't have that advantage. How do you get the medicines that you can afford?
Well, and now there's some plans that dictate where you can get your prescription filled and still have it covered by insurance.
So the whole insurance
situation
is... So
there's not even a choice then.
Yeah, it's tough. It becomes a chase to make more money within the context that should be a human right. Health is the first wealth. Philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson said that several hundred years ago, and that's still true.
So true.
You can't work if you aren't healthy.
Email from Mary. I don't know how much more time we're going to, you know, this is going to be a conversation. We're going to get to be good friends here over the next several weeks and months, I imagine,
yes,
because I think it's really important to keep drilling down into this and talking about these issues as they reemerge with the new administration. Email from Mary. Does the national market Greg is proposing mean that everyone buys in the state with the fewest regulations, cheapest plan, and lowest payments to hospitals and doctors so that the quality of health care in Ohio declines to that of Alabama or where? Ever. And that's a really interesting way to put it. Do we reduce our standard of care to the lowest common denominator?
Well, I think what you see is that some people are going to choose, I don't know, Safe Auto-esque type insurance. They're going to, because maybe that's where their income is at right now. Maybe that's also where they're at in their life cycle. You know, a young, healthy male, for example, is going to do that.
The premise of insurance coverage is that you're paying into it when you're healthy. I had catastrophic care. That's all I could afford when I was, you know, in my 20s and out of school. That's all I could afford, but I was very healthy, and that I paid into that made sure that the next person that got hit by a bus, the insurance company could cover their...
Yeah, but you also, this gets to the question of when we're talking about the benefits and the lowest care, a lot of what you're paying for in exchanges are things like men paying for maternity care and things like that.
But that's how insurance works.
And but you should pay for your benefits.
You would think
structure.
your husband would want to pay for maternity care for
a
wife.
But I'm talking about a single guy.
Every man has a mother.
But,
yes, and if you take the idea of capitalism too far, we end up in fights like this.
Right.
In the area of health care, we need to be thinking, how do we provide quality care to everybody? It's a human right.
Hmm. I have one more call, and Greg in Fraserburg, if you can, quickly. Yeah.
I can hear you.
Okay.
Well, $1 million doesn't go as far as it used to.
For sure.
My brother being a 30-year-old or being a physician for 30 years, we frequently talk about healthcare costs and most of this catastrophic insurance that, you know, my being 45 and having a health savings account with a $10,000 deductible, I'm paying about $1,200 a month, and I'm wondering if something serious were to happen, what happens when it goes over $1 million?
He's talking about the limits on catastrophic.
Yeah, the health savings accounts are scary. They are typically used by better off employees of large corporations with stable incomes.
I pay for my extras on glasses and this and that.
Yeah. But if you're talking serious health care, and if you're talking the boom and bust Ohio economy, plants open and close, seasonal employment happens, the whole health savings account structure is a fragile one for most families.
Well, and I think that the idea, too, is that you need to have the flexibility where some places are going to have the higher the deductible, of course, the concept is the lower the premium is, mm-hmm. because then you pay more out of pocket. Then you obviously save more in the health savings account. You save the money on the taxes. You have it there. You use that towards paying the deductible. And that's why a lot of the plans, a lot of people even on the exchanges, you know, and this gets to coverage and access, a lot of people are surprised. They have an insurance plan, but then they're surprised by the fact that there's actually a much higher deductible than they probably realized maybe when they were doing the shopping around. And so one of the reasons, though, that you have all those weird costing out issues happening by insurance continues to be the fact, and I guess I come back to the point before about you add too many benefits and mandates into what any insurance plan has to have that everybody then pays for. It means that everybody has to pay more than they necessarily need to for the type of coverage that they actually need. The more plans you get in and the broader the marketplace is, the more tailoring you can get to individuals. There's one other issue that we want to get to.
Well, it's very complicated.
But competition over time can make it cheaper and more affordable for more people
over
time.
But does it make it better?
Single payer over time could also make it cheaper and more affordable and tailored to people over time.
Okay. Like I said, we'll be continuing this conversation. It's not the last on this issue. When we're talking about healthcare coverage, healthcare reform afoot in the Congress now and on top of priority for the president-elect Donald Trump. Thanks for your listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.